Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 159. That's hard to believe. I'm Chad Dotson, your host. Joining me today, and this is pretty special for me. We've talked about this for a while, trying to get this arranged. If you've heard our intro music here at Red Leg Nation Radio for a while now, we got some new intro music, that funky intro music that we have in our for Red Leg Nation Radio. We've told you before, it's from one of our favorite guys, Rope-A-Dope Records recording artist, superhero movie geek, and obsessive Reds fan, Freak Bass. Welcome to the podcast, Freak Bass.
Oh man, it's a huge honor to be on. You know, you are a big part of my my daily routine, and it's great to be a little small part tonight.
I appreciate that, and you know, I'm a big fan, and a lot of us are. For those of you, I know you people have asked me about the intro music, but for the rest of the listeners out there, the way they may remember you, and be able to connect this. I mean, obviously, if you're a fan of the Cincinnati music scene, you're aware of been aware of Freak Bass for a while. But a lot of Reds fans specifically are going to remember that song, Reds Fan, that you put together. Can you tell us how that came about? And I may have to add a clip of that in into the podcast here later. But how did that concept come about? And that what was that whole process?
Well, it was, you know, there was a gentleman by the name of David Storm, and David Storm worked for the Reds. He did the the majority of the graphics down on the board down there between games, and he had this idea. He reached out to a bunch of Cincinnati musicians and asking them if they wanted to write a song about the Reds, and they were going to put it on a CD. And it was for a benefit different causes and such. And so he said, you know, I said, well, that sounds great. You know, what should I, you know, what kind of angle should I take? And he's like, just, you know, write from your heart, write what, you know, makes you into the Reds. And so I kind of took that concept literally. And I was like, well, you know, I'm a Reds fan. I've been a Reds fan my whole life. And it's like, I'm just going to, you know, not try to be too clever and call the song Reds Fan, you know. And you know, the only kind of conscious kind of thing I did when I wrote the song, like with the lyrics, is, you know, a lot of the people that were writing the music at that time on the CD were kind of used current players, which at that time was like 2006, 2007. So, you know, like at the Adam Dunns and the Griffies and stuff like that. And, I said, you know, I really want to make sure that, you know, I really want this to hopefully kind of stand the test of time a little bit and get a little bit, you know, maybe 10 or 15, 20 years from now, people will still be listening to it. So I consciously didn't include any players' names in it at all. So that was one kind of little artistic choice I made. And the other kind of really neat thing, which I was totally excited about, is we got permission from Major League Baseball to include samples of Marty and Joe on there. So there's like a section in the song, you'll hear like a bridge section where it's Marty and Joe calling like home runs and big plays for that. So David got me just a bunch of samples, and you know, we just went to town with it. And so when the song, you know, when they put out the CD and some people started kind of, I guess, liking the song a little bit, and a few months later, he said, well, you know, hey, why don't we do a video for this song? And I was like, wow, okay, that sounds great. So we went down to the ballpark, and it was a crazy night. Eric Milton was pitching that night, and they were playing the Mets. I remember the game really well, because after we got done with the video, I got to stick around and watch the rest of the game. But we literally went down to Great American Ballpark and shot it throughout the park with the fans there and everything. Everybody was like looking like, who is this crazy mug running around here, you know, in the fans. We shot some of it in the Reds Hall of Fame too as well, and you know, got to go out in the field and do some there too, which was great. So, and that was back when remember when the Reds had that little couple 2 year window when they had actually cheerleaders too, so
very exciting.
Yeah that was a crazy concept, but it worked well for a Freak Bass video. So yeah. So we got them involved, and it was great. I mean, it was a really special day doing it all. And then the best part for me as a Reds fan that day is they brought me up in the box, and I was sitting there where they do the scoreboards and where Marty talks and everything. And literally, I looked to my left, And sitting right next to me is Wayne Krizky. So that was when his days were there. Yeah, so it was kind of neat. I'm sitting here like he's looking like laser beam focus on, you know, that time in the Reds. And it was, of course, you know, if you remember, the Reds had a great big lead, and then, you know, it was Eric Milton, and I probably don't have to tell you how that story ended, you know?
Yeah, we don't need to discuss any more Eric Milton, but I pulled up that video the other day just to remind myself. I remember when the CD came out, the dork that I am, you know, I listened to that thing over and over and over, and you're right.
Sure.
I remember a lot of the songs on there. I remember specifically Adam Dunn and Austin Kearns.
Right.
And that's a pretty interesting choice and a good choice. I think it does help it to stand up.
Well, it was real tempting too, because, you know, like when you're just the national flow, and what you're watching obviously during that time, it was real, you know, tempting to bring those kind of players in, and even not even current players, you know, like some of the 90 team, you know, Barry Larkin or, you know, obviously the big Red Machine. But, like, again, I just wanted to make it more kind of, you know, universal. And then, you know, a few years later in 2010, when obviously they went to the playoffs, we reshot the video, kind of did an update to it, did like a remix of the song too as well, and then brought it out again too as well. So you know, we kind of tried to keep the whole thing kind of alive there too as well.
And if, for those of you that remember, you'll know this, but if you haven't heard it yet, you've got to go to YouTube, check it out. Go to Freak Bass is, we have, I guess I've mentioned this, he's a bassist. Funk is where we are. This is it's a funky song. It was one of my first introductions, really. I hadn't been into funk that much until then. So it's a really interesting concept and a fun song. I'm a fan.
Oh, well, thank you.
And you got to play it at Reds Fest, right?
Yeah, we got to play, and we did a crazy thing too, and it was wild. So David, you know, and a lot of people down behind the entertainment for Reds Fest, they had this idea to where when they opened the door, like on the Friday when they opened the doors, they had me with a wireless on, and they kind of had me like Pied Piper style. We did Reds Fest to open the gates and then walk on through, walk like kind of lead people in there, walked on stage, and then we ended up playing a concert. So it was a crazy, crazy concept, but it was cool. It was really, really good. Yeah.
Any cool stories from your performance at Reds Fest?
Well, you know, one, that particular Reds Fest, which I believe was 2007, we played right before Bronson Arroyo. And
I've heard of him.
Yeah. Well, I bet you we all have, like, this year. And,
yeah, he's back.
Yeah. And so, you know, first off, he's, and as I'm sure a lot of listeners and writers and everybody that might be listening to this know, I mean, he's, like, just one of the greatest dudes, you know, I mean, just such a down-to-earth, really good guy. But when he was talking, you know, we were backstage, and, you know, I was just finishing up, and he was getting ready to go on, and then basically it's one of those moments where he's standing there, I'm standing there, no one else is around. It's like, well, I got to talk to this guy. It's just the two of us right here. So he kind of, he's like, hey, man, you know, started talking to me. And I said, hey, you know, I know you used to play for Boston. I told him my booking agent is actually out of Boston. And so we kind of got in this little Boston conversation. And he said, you know, there's this great club you got to play in Boston. And I can't even remember what the name of the club was now, but the story's great. So he said, you know, it's awesome because you can, they book you there for two nights. And when you get done the first night, you don't have to move any gear afterwards. You can just, you know, just leave there. And I'm like thinking to myself, here's a guy who's like, you know, multimillionaire baseball player talking to me and talking about how not having to worry about moving gear.
Right.
And it was, but what was so cool about it is the fact that it was like when he's, you know, when he's in musician mode, he's not trying to, you know, hey, I'm the big baseball player guy. I'm just a musician like you are. And he was on, you know, that had it at that kind of level too as well. And so it was really great, you know. And then, you know, obviously since then I've, you know, hung out with him a few other times besides that, him being a big music guy himself. And you know, I was real excited that, you know, when I heard about him, you know, possibly coming back here this year. So just because I think he's, as you guys have discussed on the show many times, I think, you know, if nothing else, just the influence that he's going to have over some of these younger guys coming up is just going to be huge, you know.
Yeah, I have no. I think there's nothing but a good idea in terms of signing him to a minor league contract, and if he makes it, great. But if not, what a great guy to have around. I mean,
oh yeah, the best. Yeah, and you know, one other thing is that Reds Fest, at the end of Reds Fest, that's I believe it was the same one we played 2 years in a row, and I believe it was that same one. What year did Dusty come here? Was he 2006 or 2007, or was it 8?
It might have been 8. I think it was 8.
Okay, well, I guess it was 2007 to 2008 when I played Reds Fest. Because so 2008 when we played Reds Fest, the next year, it was, you know, they did the big announcement with, you know, with Dusty, and we were playing right after that. And man, Dusty like walked over to me and my drummer, and gave me like the biggest hug. He talked to me like I'd known the guy for like 20 years, you know, never, you know, obviously ever seen him. He'd never seen me before. And I just remember thinking, this is before, you know, he'd managed one day with the team. I just like, wow, if he's like has that kind of rapport with the person. I mean, it was just that magical sparkle where he was just like made that connection with you as if like, you know, you've known him forever. I was like, if he has that kind of connection with me for a guy, you know, goofy musician guy he doesn't even know, I can't even imagine how good it's going to be for this team, you know. And obviously we saw what the outcome of that was.
And what's funny is whatever you think of Dusty Baker and Bronson Arroyo, those stories fit exactly what I would have imagined out of both of them. I mean, they're really just seem like pretty good guys, both of them, outside of baseball.
No doubt. And, you know, as you know, but Dusty's a fanatical music fan.
Yes.
Too, and he knows his music too. It's not just like, I mean, you know, I remember one quote that C. Trent put in. It was my favorite quote. I think I might even have like the newspaper clipping, because it was so, he was talking about comparing, I can't remember what he was talking about. He was talking about something about comparing playing baseball to Maggot Brain by Funkadelic. And I was like, all right, you know the album Maggot, which is a pretty obscure, not extremely obscure, but you have to be a music fan to know that album.
Yeah.
And, you know, that he used that as a reference point for the Reds. I all my friends, musician friends that I tour with on different parts of the country, you know, I was like, I think I, you know, sent that to them on Facebook so they could like check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny. I used to get frustrated at all the things Dusty did. And he did some good things, obviously, but he did some things that used to frustrate me. But every time I started to get frustrated, I would think, oh, yeah, that frustrates me. But man, I'd love to spend an evening with that guy, just hanging out and talking about anything other than baseball. It seems like such an interesting guy with such a wide range of interests. And so that's and definitely music. He's legendary to be a big fan of music, serious fan of music. I want to get into how you sort of became a Reds fan, and you're from Cincinnati, I know, but tell me a little bit right now about you touring, your band. I want to, for those of our listeners who haven't heard you before, give us a little introduction to Freakbass.
Well, you know, like as you mentioned, I grew up here in Cincinnati, and you know, as well as being a huge Reds town, as we all know it is, and baseball town, one of the other things that Cincinnati is, you know, nationally and internationally known for is being this huge funk city. For those that don't know, you know, James Brown recorded, you know, the majority of his hits here in Cincinnati at King Records. And it's like every generation, you know, you had, we're talking like late 1960s, early 70s. And then you went on to the later 70s with obviously Bootsy Collins, and you know, Bootsy, who's produced a few of my albums as well. And then moving into the 80s with Zapp and Midnight Star. And then, so there's always been this huge funk, you know, community, Cincinnati, and of course, just a little up in the road in Dayton too, with Ohio Players and Lakeside and all those bands up there. And, so, you know, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, you know, all my friends were like listening to, you know, Nirvana and Green Day and all that stuff, which, you know, I love that stuff too as well. But, you know, I was kind of getting into like stuff like the Dr. Dre stuff and the Snoop Dogg stuff, which was all samples of old P-Funk stuff and funk stuff. And then, so that kind of started getting my interest there. And then hearing about Zapp. And then, you know, a few years later, I got lucky enough to got asked to be on there's a label out of Japan called P-Vine Records, and it's a funk and soul records label. And they were putting together a compilation song album about Jimi Hendrix with different funk artists doing songs on there, like Ohio Players are doing one, Earth, Wind, and Fire. And so the guy named Gary Mudbone Cooper, who is one of Bootsy's singers, sang with Parliament Funkadelic, him and a guy named Michael Hampton, who's known as Kid Funkadelic to those in the funk circles, were doing a song for the album. Muddy had known about me, kind of starting to kind of make my name a little bit in the scene playing bass, and he asked me to play bass on it, and I asked him who's producing it, and he said, oh, Bootsy's producing it. And I was like, what? You know, and I kind of did the head spin thing like in the cartoons. And you know, he brought me out to his studio, Bootsy, and Bootsy was producing and engineering the track. Bootsy and I hit it off really well. And then he, you know, got in touch with me a couple weeks later and said, hey, why don't you come over here? We'll start writing some songs together. And, you know, for me being a bass player and a funk player and all that stuff, you know, it was like, you know, I felt like I was, you know, in another dream world.
Right.
And, it was a huge, you know, when, you know, I was just kind of starting out at that point, and it was a huge, you know, He's one of those people that's, you know, comes from the school, you know, teach a man to fish versus to show him how to fish in terms of, starting your career, and just really kind of took me under his wing for a few years, and it was great. And it's, again, it's all good. It all stems back from the Cincinnati thing. I mean, had I been in New York or L.A. or Minneapolis or whatever, I mean, I'm sure I'd still be playing music for sure, but had, you know, I'm not sure if it would be funk, and I obviously wouldn't have had the kind of influence that I had here being in this funk city of Cincinnati.
You know, I don't think I'd mentioned this to you before, but last year my wife and I went to this music festival in downtown Asheville, North Carolina, and specifically wanted to go to see Bootsy Collins, and of course he put on a fantastic show. But I turned to my wife about halfway through, and I said, I don't know, this guy's no freak bass.
Oh,
I didn't say it real loud.
I love Asheville. That's an amazing music town. Just amazing town, and an amazing music town too as well. Yeah, I've played there many times.
Yeah, it's an incredible town. We try to get down there as often as we can. So, so tell me, you've been touring. What's going on with the touring right now?
Well, I'm about last June, but not about a year and a half ago, I got signed to a pretty cool label. They're called Ropadope Records. They're out of Philadelphia. Probably their biggest artist right now is a band called Snarky Puppy. They won a Grammy this past year as well. They're doing really well right now. Very cool, bigger independent label, very artist-friendly label. So that's really picked up my touring a lot. I signed with a new agent a few years back. And so, you know, I'm on the road pretty much nonstop anymore. So, that MLB app comes in handy, to put it that way.
No doubt.
Yeah, for sure. So, so that's kind of what I'm doing right now. I just recently signed some of those listeners that might know the band Living Color. The guy that manages Living Color got in touch with me a few months back, and I just recently signed, just literally 3 or 4 weeks ago, a management deal with him. So he's managing me now. So there's some kind of cool opportunities that are starting to happen because of that too as well, that is just kind of kicking in. So, you know, I'm just working on the next record, touring quite a bit, and getting ready for the 27 Reds to win the World Series. That's, you know, it is spring, so I can say that, right?
Hope springs eternal, we say. That's right.
That's right.
And that's why you're here. I mean, you know, you've been so supportive of the podcast, certainly, and granted us, allowed us to use your music for our intro, and we really appreciate that. But you're here tonight mostly because you're a big Reds fan, and let's talk about your personal history, I guess, as a Reds fan. I assume you grew up playing baseball, and that was part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I always joke with people. I said, when I got to the age when I realized I couldn't play professional baseball, that's when I was like, well, not baseball, maybe bass guitar. So I moved over that way. So
that's close.
Yeah, spelled close enough. But yeah, I mean, I was, played, all grown up as a kid, probably played till I was about 12 or 13 years old, played third base. And in Fairfax, I don't know if people know where Fairfax is at. That's, on the east side of town. And just was enchanted by baseball and at the same time was becoming a Reds fan too as well. My mom was like a huge big Red Machine fan, of course, and got all the great stories about that. And then got to when the 90 World Series thing happened, obviously that was that kind of just put it in a whole nother level for me, from there just been fanatical about it. I mean, it's so much in the history and the water here in Cincinnati. You just can't get away from it.
Yeah, it was similar with me. Growing up, I played and wasn't very good, but I loved it. And the 1990 World Series came along when I was a teenager, and it was right at a time where it just sort of cemented to me, oh man, this is my team, and it's been an obsession for the rest of my life, certainly.
And totally, and it was kind of the same thing with me, and because I was a teenager then too as well, and I was trying, and it was like And I remember it was like that magical, like all my, you know, everybody obviously was kind of watching, you know, because it was such a big deal in Cincinnati. But, you know, there was something, you know, all my friends were kind of like, what are you getting? So I remember that's when kind of the obsession part of it started kicking in, put it that way.
Right.
You know, just, I mean, I can remember that World Series like it was yesterday, you know, with you know, the Paul O'Neill's throw from that, what, that far right field or that third base throw. I remember that one when it was like yesterday, or what was it, Glenn Bragg's, right, for that, that catch, right? I mean,
those
little things, those, you know, it's like those just, and it's funny because I can't even remember, you know, what I had for lunch today, but I can remember that stuff, you know?
Oh, I remember things about that series and the whole season that, yeah, they just stick with me. And it was a thing where I was already a big Reds fan, obviously. It just,
sure.
I loved the Reds, but man, that happened and it came along at the right time to just, well, I've got no choice now. I'm stuck with this team forever. And it's been mostly fun.
Yeah, and I actually, on that series, I mean, you know, I don't know if you feel the same way, but, you know, the Pittsburgh, you know, with the playoff, that was one that was like the nail biter. I mean, oh my goodness, you know, it was like such high draw. Yeah, I mean, not that the A series was great too, just because they were the, you know, it was like, you know, that the Bugs Bunny cartoon where they were like the you know, where it was Bugs was them. But still, that Pittsburgh series, oh my goodness, that's the one that really sticks with me more than anything else, you know?
Oh, absolutely. We wrote this book that's coming out, and whenever we can get our publisher to put it out, they've moved our publication date back a little bit. But, you know, I wrote about the 1990 series, but I also wrote about the 1990 National League Championship Series against the Pirates. And that was so much more fun to me to go back and research. And I got to watch, I went back and watched a couple of the games again. And I guess because I'd watched the World Series so many times, and we all remember all those World Series views, like videos and all that, but that was an amazing series against the Pirates, and just so many highlights. You know, you think about that throw to nail Bobby Bonilla at third, and
I know,
and then Glenn Bragg's going up and catching the ball above the fence, and just just a crazy series, fun series, and I had a lot more fun going back and reminiscing about that one than I did the series even. So that's a magical year, and as I understand it, you're predicting that 2017 is going to be a similar season for the Reds, right?
Wire to wire, buddy. Wire to wire. That's where we're going. But you know, I think, you know, if, you know, segueing into to this year, if it's okay to do that right now.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, you and I talked about this off air a little bit too, and this, you know, this team reminds me, I mean, just in terms of the vibe of this team, it reminds me of the same feeling I had of like the 2008 year, which was obviously when Bruce and obviously Votto'd been up, and Bruce was just coming up, and Cueto was coming into his own, and that's such an exciting, you know, even, you know, in 2008 we kind of knew then it wasn't like they were going to win the World Series in 2008. I don't think anybody was thinking that either. But there, you could see the light at the end of the tunnel for sure, and it was kind of getting. There was that excitement that was in there. I mean, that's a, you know, I'm the biggest, you know, obviously the biggest Red fan in the world. But the last couple of years were kind of just tough, just because you felt like they were kind of putting their feet in two different oceans in terms of where we want to be, you know.
Right.
And I think, like you have discussed on the show many times, I mean, I think, you know, a couple of years ago the All-Star, you know, I just always wonder what would have happened or where we'd be right now if the All-Star game wasn't here, you know, a couple years ago, because I really think that really that really changed the dynamic of everything so much, you know. And I understood from a business standpoint, I understood why they were doing what they were doing because of the All-Star game being here. It would have been weird if it would have been like all just totally like young rebuild team when, you know, when you're having all this national media coming into your ballpark. But, you know, still, we all, you know, as we all knew, it was definitely, you know, the writing was starting to come on the wall at that point, too, you know. So, but now, you know, now we're here. And, you know, with all the, you know, the Twitter craziness and talk about, I mean, I think the Reds have done some, you know, whether it be, you know, Dick Williams or Walt Jocketty or a combination of both. They've done some pretty cool things over the last couple of years to set themselves up now, and you know, in my opinion, you know, with a lot of these, and even some of the trades. I mean, the fact, you know, that we got Suarez for you know, the way that we did. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, for nothing, you know.
Alfredo
and
Simon.
Then obviously, and you're right for Simon, and
for
then
the
obviously
corpse of Alfredo Simon, yeah.
Exactly, you know, and still got him back after that anyway. So right. Even that, it didn't work out so well. But and you know, even like the DeSclafani thing. I mean, you know, I was like, and I'm like Mr. Stat like nut. And I was like thinking like, really, you want to get rid of Latos right now?
Yeah,
you know,
I didn't
and
get it.
Obviously, something that they knew something that we didn't know, because I mean, you know, it was like almost like overnight. It was like boom, you know. So
yeah, perfect timing on that. And to circle back, I think you're right. We're at a point now where we're starting to poke our heads. The Reds are starting to poke their heads above water just a little bit, and you do wonder if maybe that wouldn't have happened a year earlier if they had not delayed the rebuilding process a little bit. But it is what it is, and here we are. And I thought your comparison of this team with the 2008 team was really appropriate. I mean, the 2018, they had a losing record that year. It was another of a long string of losing seasons. But, man, you could really start to see the next good Reds team take shape. And I'm really hoping that's what we're going to get this year. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to have a Votto or a Cueto or something, or Bruce. I remember I saw Bruce actually in Yankee Stadium that year when 2 weeks after he came up, and he was just, there's so much excitement around the Reds at that time. And finally, we have a team that looks like they're going to be something. And who knew, you know, we didn't know when it was going to be. And that, and the same way with the current, we don't know when this team's going to be competitive again. But I just see, I like that comparison because I see some similar things. I see some reasons to be excited about this team, reasons to hope that some of these young guys, if they pan out, hey, there's a light at the end of this tunnel. And again, that's probably not going to be this year that we're going to get to the end of the tunnel. But you can kind of start to, if you squint a little bit, you can see the end of this road of rebuilding. And it's, to me, that's exciting. There's a lot of young talent here, and it just, you know, I want the Reds to win a World Series. That's why I watch. But
right,
if you were disappointed with everything short of a World Series, you're going to be always miserable as a baseball fan, and certainly as a Reds fan. I see a competitive team coming up, and I see a lot of young guys that are fun to root for. You feel the same way about that? Some of these young guys are just exciting to watch.
I couldn't say it better. Yeah, I mean, Suarez and, you know, even Duvall and Schebler and you know, obviously Peralta, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I'm that alone, just like, what's that dynamic going to be like? You know, because, you know, Brandon's been here for so long. It's just like, you know, that's going to be kind of, it's going to be sad, exciting, you know, all those kind of things. I can't remember who wrote this. Might have been C. Trent, I think. And I know you guys were talking about it recently on your podcast, but where they said, you know, you could still be a huge Brandon Phillips fan and still, you know, be glad about the trade that happened, you know, as well. And that's totally how I feel. I mean, I love Brandon to death, but it's like, you know, everybody knew it was time. You know, I just can't wait to see, you know, what happens with the second base situation, how that pans out. I mean, and who's going to be, you know, that 2008 year, was it 2009 that Scott Rowland came here? Is that right? That second half of 2009,
yeah,
right?
Yes, right. Before the big season, yes.
Right, exactly. And obviously then we had that, like, huge winning record in that second half when he came here, mm-hmm. obviously. And it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, not that it's going to repeat that same exact formula, but, like, you know, are they going to do that kind of thing? You know, I mean, we've kind of got Scott Rowland and the fact that we got Joey Votto. I'm not saying Joey Votto is Scott Rowland, but I'm saying in terms of that, by the time, that'll be that kind of same similar kind of veteran presence. And obviously, you know, Votto's kind of a quiet guy, but, you know, he's leads by example, I think, you know, so you've kind of got that in there too. And that's a whole nother dynamic. We didn't have Joey Votto back in 2008. We didn't have the Joey Votto that we have now.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that whole dynamic happens. I mean, it's just, there's just so many variables that could play out, and you know, this is baseball, and you know, no one was predicting the Cleveland Indians were going to be in the World Series last year, you know, at the beginning of the season. No one was, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, baseball's a strange thing, and that's why we love it so much. You never know what can happen in one season, you know.
And I'm accused sometimes of being overly optimistic about things, but I think that you absolutely could envision a scenario where next season is a sort of another version of the 2010 Reds, a division championship season. Now, I know we got to go past the Cubs, and that is what it is. The Cubs are going to be good, but I really truly believe that if things fall the right way, this team could be a playoff team next year, and it could be a fun team to watch this year. I think one thing this team will have that you're right, the 2010 team did not have, there was nobody on that 2010 team as good as Joey Votto.
Right.
Even though Joey Votto was on that team, and that was the year that Joey Votto became Joey Votto, but
right, exactly. Yep.
Maybe I'm just trying to be optimistic. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic. But I really don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that some of these young guys pan out this year. We get Nick Senzel up next year, kind of the way Chris Bryant came up with the Cubs, you know, similar college guys from the SEC. And all of a sudden, obviously it's going to end up depending on how these young pitchers turn out. But if they do, there's no reason this team can't be competitive within the next year and a half.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm with you 100% on that. And, you know, I'm sure all the listeners, you know, and all the Twitter responses are going to be like the first words out of everybody's mouth is going to be pitching, 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 you know, because that's obviously such a huge, huge part of this. But I mean, there's no doubt that the bullpen's going to be way better than it was at the beginning of last year. There's just,
not even going to be close. You know, right.
Right. Exactly. You know,
and there's a chance these young starters can turn into a rotation. Are you as sort of bullish on the young starters as I am? I think there's a chance to have a pretty good rotation here.
Yeah, I do too. I really do. You know, and we always have to put in the injury word in there, unfortunately. But, I think that if everybody stays healthy, and I definitely think there's a really good shot of that too as well. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got so many young guys who have a chance of being a number 2, 3, 4 starter, something like that. I think one of the prospect analysts said there's no team in baseball that has as many guys that are almost guaranteed to be at least a number 4 starter. And you can make a pretty good rotation when you start getting, get a couple of 2s and a couple of 3s and a 4 starter. And that's, I don't know that we have anybody that's going to be a super ace unless it ends up being Cody Reed or Amir Garrett. But they certainly have that potential. But I think there's so many guys, even going down to guys like Rookie Davis and Sal Romano.
Sure.
So many guys in the mix. If they can't find 5 good starters out of that bunch, and then, you know, fingers crossed, Homer Bailey ever comes back and is halfway decent.
Yeah.
Di Sclafani is going to be great. I think he's turned the corner. I really think Brandon.
And he got, didn't he just get approved to play again today? I thought I read that.
Yeah. I was a little worried about they skipped over his first spring training start, but he's been approved to throw again. So,
okay, good.
Fingers still crossed on him because the Reds can't have him and Homer out. But I think he's going to be the ace this year. Brandon Finnegan. Fangraphs.com predicted Brandon Finnegan to be the ace this year. So, again, I think that some of that is looking through Pete Rose-colored glasses, as I say. But,
right.
But on the other hand, that's exciting to me that you have that hope that these guys can pan out. And we've not had that hope, like you mentioned a minute ago. The last couple of years, the Reds have said, we're not going to compete. And there's not been a whole lot of hope. And so that's why this year, I think, is so much more exciting as a Reds fan than anything we've seen since probably 2012 or 13.
Yeah, I agree, too. You can tell all those guys are so hungry, too, as well. You know, and you just kind of sense that with those kind of teams like that. Just like going back to that 2008 analogy, you know, everybody was out to kind of prove something, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, which is can be a good thing sometimes if it's healthy. And I definitely feel that, you know. And I mean, I've become in the last couple of years, I'm a huge Suarez fan. I mean, you know, I've never been the type to go out and buy a jersey with the name on the back, but if I was, I'd probably go get one of his jerseys on the back just because
it's
just been so fun watching his trajectory, and it's weird how much I guess it's not really under the radar because, I mean, everybody's been, you know, acknowledging it. And I know a lot of his defensive, getting his defense together has been, you know, part of the thing that's kind of maybe kept him down out of the spotlight as much as it is. But I mean, man, just like when he's on a roll, he's just like a hitting machine, you know. It's just amazing to watch him. And it's just, he's one of those at-bats. Just like Votto, whenever he's at bat, he's the one I want to go watch, you know.
Yeah.
And that's always exciting, you know, as a viewer.
And I think under the radar is the right way to put it. I think we've talked a lot in the last year, certainly, about what's going to happen with the Reds infield. You know, we got Jose Peraza and Dilson Herrera. They traded Jay Bruce for Dilson Herrera. Is he going to be the second baseman? And Nick Senzel was drafted number 2 overall last year to play third base. And I've said a couple times at Red Leg Nation, and of course I think we've said it here at the podcast too, there has to be a spot in that infield, whether it's second base or third base or shortstop. I don't know where. There has to be a spot for Eugenio Suarez. He's the only one of these guys we're talking about that has established himself as a major leaguer, and he's just 24. I mean, he's still improving. I'm with you. I think that he is the most underrated player in this organization, and I don't understand why his name, at least amongst the fans, why his name is not sort of in the mix more when you start talking about the guys that are going to be on the next good Reds team. Maybe it's because it's hard to pronounce his name.
Yeah, I mean, that might be part of it. Yeah, but I mean, I agree. Yeah, I mean, he's just so fun to watch, you know, and I mean, I think he's just something really, really special, you know, and I hope that he's not, you know, one of those guys that, like, well, and I don't think the Reds are going to give up on him. I'm not even bring that up because it's like, you know, you always hope that, like, you can kind of see that he's going to be special and then all of a sudden that he ends up being used for trade bait later. But I don't think that's even probably in the mix with them because I'm sure they can see all the same stuff that we do and they probably know a lot more than we do about that, you know?
No, they know way more than we do. That's what I try to say.
Right.
When I criticize, I think, well, okay, I'm criticizing, but I have to concede they have more information than I do.
That is correct.
I was going to ask you who your favorite guy was on this team, and so you sort of cut me off there. Is there another guy that you really – who's the one guy that if you had to pay to get in to watch one of them, other than Votto and other than Suarez, who's the one guy you really want to see when you go to a Red?
I like how you put Votto. I was like, you throw the Votto out.
That's obvious,
like,
no, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the obvious one. You know, if not those two guys, you know, I would probably have to say Billy Hamilton. And I know you're a big fan. I mean, but he's just so exciting to watch, you know. And when he's on, he brings that excitement, you know, to the team like no one else does, you know. And
I do know, yes. I love that guy. Billy is just I've called him and you're a big comic book superhero guy. That's what I call him, comic book superhero center fielder. I mean, he just does things that nobody else can do.
Yeah, definitely. And you're talking about, you know, Suarez coming into his own. Obviously, we've been seeing that with him over the last couple of years too, as well. Especially last year, you know, when he was healthy. I mean, you just see you can just see his numbers rising all the time too, as well. And just his comfort level, just where. You know, I think that's such a big part of it with these guys too. It's you know, yeah, part of his experience getting used to hitting major league pitching and all the technical aspects of it. But there's, you know, how it is when you start a new job. There's just like a comfort level, you know, and once you've been in that job for a couple years, you know, it just changes the whole how you play, how you react, whatever, no matter what line of work you're in. And it's, I'm sure it's the same for ball players too.
Especially when you come up as young as he is, and he's still a kid.
Yeah. Yep.
And last year had a league average on base percentage, so he's getting on base more now. Yeah, the sky's the limit for that young man. My other guy that I love to watch, and it's for a similar reason that I love to watch Bronson Arroyo back in the day. Bronson was my favorite guy back when he was
sure.
Bronson. But it's Rozel Iglesias is a guy.
Oh yeah.
The things he knows how to pitch, kind of like Bronson. He'll change arm angles. He'll change speeds. He's just, and of course he can overpower you too. He's got a fastball. When he's healthy, he's another guy I just love. I wish his shoulder was able to hold up to starting, because I think he could be one of the top starting pitchers in the league. I just don't know that his shoulder's ever going to be able to handle that, but he's fun to watch.
Is that what you think? Is that pretty much one of the main reasons you think they moved him to the bullpen for that reason?
Yeah, I think they've made the determination. And again, that's a situation where they know more than I do. They've seen the medical reports.
Sure.
You know, he's gotten hurt each of the last 2 years. I think they don't believe that his arm can withstand the rigors of starting every 5 days. And so, but you know, if that's not going to happen, the way they're talking about using him, which is, you know, a sort of a multiple inning reliever.
Right.
I think that could be, you know, if he could pitch 100 innings, 110 innings out of the bullpen, he could still be a very valuable player as dominant as he is. One of my favorite guys.
What about, you know, Michael Lorenzen's the one that, who's, you know, and on the pitching front, he's a very exciting guy to watch too as well. He's one of the ones too, I wonder, like, again, I'm sure it's stuff that we don't know, but it just seems like he's got starter material, but, you know, there may be things, of course, I don't know, but it's just, you know, he's got that feel and look about him, you know, the way he carries himself when he is in there in the later innings, you know.
You've touched on one of my pet peeves, and you're probably doing it just to upset me, so thanks a lot, man. There has to be something that we don't know, because all the public information, I can't find any reason why they wouldn't even give him a shot in spring training this year to start.
Sure.
He said late last year that he prefers being a starter. He wants to be a starter. He would much prefer. He'll do whatever the team wants him to do. He said all the right things, but he said he'd like to be a starter. He was out for a long time last year, but a big part of that was he had mono, you know, for a long time.
I remember that.
It wasn't just, you know, problems with being able to handle a workload, and he's still young, and you're right, he's got just dynamite stuff. I think he could make an incredible starter, and there must be something. Again, I'm always willing to believe that there's something I don't know, but I'd love to know what it is, because he looks to me like the type of guy that has not just starter potential, but number two, number three starter potential. He's got that kind of talent.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Yeah. So, we'll see what happens. I mean, it sounds like it's semi-determined already, but, you know, it'd be nice if something changed with that for sure.
It did. It would be nice, but, you know, I look at the flip side of that, which is I really like having, as much as we had to endure with that bullpen last year, I like having, Lorenzen and Iglesias and Drew Storen out there. You know, that's, Tony Cingrani closed for most of last year, and he'll be the number fourth or number fifth option out in the bullpen this year, and that's pretty exciting just from the standpoint of not having to, you know, have your stomach hurt every time a reliever came in like last year.
Yeah, and if they can do it, you know, like the way Kansas City was, two years ago, where, you know, basically when you got to the sixth inning, the game's over, you know, that kind of situation, that would be great, you know.
Nasty boys, Lorenzen, Iglesias, and Storen, nasty boys too, right?
That's right, that's right, definitely.
I don't know about that. Do you have a prediction for the 2017 Reds in terms of record or number of wins or just any predictions at all about what we're going to see?
Wow. I want to see how bold I can get. I'm kind of in the middle of the road. I mean, so if I'm such in the middle of the road, I don't think it's going on. I'm too crazy of a limb. I would say that there'll be 500 this year, you know?
All right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I still think that obviously they're going to be far behind the Cubs, but I think everybody's going to be far behind the Cubs probably. I think 500, I think that's realistic for this year. And I think that'd be almost kind of a good, you know, and I'm sure they're probably thinking the same thing, kind of a good mental goal for them too as well, you know.
And a good way to move into 2018. Yeah, I predicted a couple weeks ago, 81 and 81, that they'd be 500 this year. And some people thought I was kidding, and some people thought I was an idiot, and some people thought I was high. I was none of those. Maybe a little optimistic, but I don't think I don't think that's crazy. I think that's certainly within the realm of the expected range of victories they could get. And when you think about that, then we're taking it. We know what we have in the young guys. We're taking that step forward to possibly having a special season next year. I don't see any reason they can't be competitive.
I think what's going to be really interesting is the trade deadline this year. Let's say they're still, you know, in fear, like on paper, it looks like they're doing really well, you know, not so much of like, hey, who can we get to have us win, you know, in 2017, but almost kind of like the Scott Rowland situation back in 2009, to where they know that they're just above the horizon or beyond the horizon, excuse me, for winning in 2018. So are we going to go do a big move at the trade deadline, not for the remaining of the season necessarily, but for more like a 2018 type situation? You know, I think that's going to be really interesting. Like if they're in that position, like a winning position or close to winning position, to where everybody's like, okay, this team, the trajectory is happening like we think it's going to be happening. So let's, because a lot of times at the trade deadline, that might be the spot, even that it's not the most convenient thing. Cause I remember when they made that trade for Rowland, everybody was like, what are they? Cause I think they had a losing record at that point, I think.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what are you doing going and trading for, you know? And obviously, you know, they had that plan, you know, Jockety had that plan, and it ended up being a really good one, you know?
And I think that's what's fun about this the potential for this season is that, you know, at some point this year we're going to be seeing whether these young guys can handle it. You're going to start to learn which guys are going to be part of the plan, which guys have played themselves into the talk for the next good Reds team, and which guys haven't. And you start to – it gets a little bit more clear where the Reds are weak and where they need to go fill in. Whether it be by trade or even free agent in the off season, and at some point soon, it is going to have to transition to, okay, now we sort of know what we have, we know what these young guys we have an idea what these young guys can do because they've gotten a chance now on the major league level. Here's where our holes are. How do we fill them? And that's sort of what happened with the Rowland trade. Certainly, you know, hey, we have this spot that we feel like not just a third base. Because we don't think Edwin can handle it, and he certainly couldn't defensively.
Sure,
but also, you know, sort of a veteran leader to come in and the Rowland trade. I was a big fan of Edwin Encarnacion, but you can't really complain about the results of the Scott Rowland trade. And
right.
So, it'd be interesting to see when that happens, when they start to acknowledge, all right, we're close enough that we can start filling in these holes. And it could be at some point this year. I agree with you. And that you talk about exciting. That will be exciting when they start to turn that corner.
Well, I thought that it was about a week or two ago in the papers, Dick Williams, how he said, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, you know, we're not telling the players you're in a rebuilding year. We're here to win. You know, it's not like that's the mentality that these players have. They're not thinking we're a rebuilding year. So it's like that was a really encouraging thing to see for sure.
Yeah, it was refreshing. You know, the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that they expect the players to go out there and try to win. And that's been the difficulty Brian Price has had, because management has conceded before the season began that we don't expect to win. And they're not giving away that anymore. They're saying, all right, we're here to win. You know, they're not necessarily saying that we're going to win a championship this year, but the expectations are starting to shift. And again, as a Reds fan and a longtime Reds fan, this is the moment where the next few years could be really, really fun. And that's why you endure those bad years, right?
That's it. That's exactly it. You know, that's what makes being a baseball fan so fun. And again, that's why I wanted to get, you know, and I'm sure you were the same way. I wanted to get to this point where we're at now a couple of years ago. But, you know, baseball is what it is. But now we're here. So it's all good.
Yeah, here we are. And so let's enjoy it. Man, I really, really glad we finally got to work this out to have you on the podcast, and I guarantee we're going to do it again if you're willing to. If I haven't scared you off with my crazy accent.
No, gosh, I'll always come here I'll talk Reds baseball. You know, it's like I bore half my friends to death. You know, like my bandmates are the best because they try so hard to humor me when I'm on the road with them. You know, and I'm like, if there's a big, you know, especially during during the trade deadline and we're on the road. You know, I'm the type that's like listening up till 5 till 3 o'clock. You know that day and like, you know, everything, and they're just trying to like humor me in the van and stuff. So it's any chance I get to talk to someone about this one-on-one, I will always be more than happy to do that. And again, thank you, you know, for having me on. I mean, I'm real excited about all the success you've been having with both the show and obviously your books and everything. It's just you know, it's a great town to be I still torn so much. One of the nice things about it is that, you know, people ask me about Cincinnati all the time when I'm in different cities, and you know, obviously talk about funk and music and that whole history, but you know, the Reds always come up, even to non-music fans, and how much just a baseball. You know, when I tell people that we have an opening day parade, people are still like, "What?" You know, they just don't even understand that. You know, and it's just, you know, this is Cincinnati. It's, you know, funk and baseball. Yep.
That's exactly. Funk and Baseball. That's the name of this podcast here. Funk and Baseball.
Funk and Baseball, yeah. F-U-N-K-I-N. Funk and Baseball. That's
Funk
right.
Funk and Baseball. I like it. Well, again, Freak Base, really appreciate you coming out. Anything you want to plug? Anything? Where do people go to find you? Freakbase.com, I know.
Yeah, very easy. Just always remember, we, you know, a little messed up on our spelling. So it's 2 E's, FreakBase.com. I'm in all those normal places. Obviously, Twitter, I hang out there probably way too much. And same thing, just at Freakbase, and you know, the old Facebook page, Freakbase Music. So it's all those kind of normal places there. You'd find us hanging out. But Twitter's probably my favorite. I'm like, I always say this. It's like, if I wasn't a musician and in a band, I don't think I'd even be on Facebook, to be honest with you. It's a little bit too much crazy drama. I mean, not that Twitter's not dramatic, believe me, but at least that you can keep that drama down to whatever, 140 characters. That makes it easier, you know.
Exactly. And the best part of Twitter, you know, for those of you, go out there, go follow Freakbase, because I remember just a few weeks ago, I was up way too late. It was 2 a.m. or something. And here comes a tweet asking something about the Reds, or commenting on something I said about the Reds, and a little bit of discussion with Freakbase. You're a real Reds fan, man. You're the real deal. And really appreciate you joining us here on Red Leg Nation Radio.
Oh, well, much continued success, and thank you, Chad, and any time, and to all Red Leg Nation, you know, and everybody I've met, you know, whether it be at a game or at a show or anything, just, you know, thanks for bearing with me, this crazy-looking guy that, you know, that's a big Reds fan. So thank you, Cincinnati, and thank you to Red Leg Nation.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, we're going to have you back real soon on the podcast. Those of you that have listened to us, I can't thank you enough for downloading. I know you got a lot of places you could go for your time and entertainment. You could be listening to some funk. But instead, you've chosen for at least the last little bit to listen to us here and download us, and I really appreciate that. You can find us on iTunes. Go leave us a rating and a review if you like us. If you don't like us, just keep your mouth shut. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Google Play, TuneIn Radio. Search for Red Leg Nation Radio. You can find me at Dotson C on Twitter, at Red Leg Nation, obviously. Find Freakbass at Freakbass, F-R-E-E-K-B-A-S-S. And, of course, you can follow us at RedLegNation.com, where we're writing about the Reds and obsessing over every minute detail of the Cincinnati Reds every single day. For my good friend Freakbass, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.